Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Chatting and Sharing. Today we welcome back Adam Michael James to talk about one of my favorite shows, Bewitched, and his new ebook of Bewitched. Hi, Mike. How are you? Welcome to the show.
Hi, Sherry. It's good to be chatting with you again.
It's great to be chatting with you again. anything new and exciting, other than the new book, of course, that you want to say, or anything new happening?
Well, I mean, the ebook is kind of a new thing. I'm not going to say that yet. I'm pulling a McMahon and Tate with Kraft commercial. I'm like, buy it here. No, let's talk about it first. I just thought that, I love the print version. And I'm old school. I like to hold a book in my hand, all that stuff. But I have noticed since the book came out that, sometimes, the first thing that people always say is, it's so huge. It's such a big book. And at first that used to bother me, but then I started to realize, no, it's true. It is big. I mean, it covers 254 episodes. So, there's no way it's going to be like, a magazine size or something. But I thought that it might be nice to get with the 21st century and not only have the print version, but put an electronic version out there. So, that just came out on Kindle on Valentine's Day and just today on iTunes. And what's kind of interesting for me about it is, we've gotten so used to, the computer age. Like if I mess up something on the stove, I find myself wanting to click for edit undo, it's like, oh, wait, I can't do that, or like actually looking through a physical book and going, why can't I find this? Can I do an edit, find, replay? Oh, no, I have to actually look through it. So the nice thing about the ebook is because there's so much material covered is that people can do searches. And even though I like the physical layout of the print version, the ebook has to be kind of able to adapt to people's e-readers and tablets. So it's not as pretty, but I was able to put stuff in color, which I couldn't do in the print version, and that includes most of the pictures, because each season has a group of four pictures, and in the print version they all had to be black and white, and so now most of them that I had available to me in color, I was able to put in the ebook in color. So that's kind of cool.
That is cool. It's really interesting because I was just thinking as you were talking. I mean, I come from the time period before the internet, not before computers, because that's like way back, but before the internet. And I mean, I remember encyclopedias. I remember buying companion books and looking at an index to find the page I want. I mean, it's like we're so needing convenience today. It's so weird.
Oh my God! Yes. I mean, it's funny you should say that because there was this one book I had to have it. It was 1984. I was, I guess I was 14 years old, and it was $25. It was like the pictorial history of television from 1946 up through at that point 1982, and I begged my mother for it because there were three pictures from Bewitched in it. That was it. I just wanted it for $25 in $1984 for those three Bewitched pictures. But it was because, we couldn't just Google it,
Yeah.
It's like you just had to get what you could get. And yeah, exactly. It's just funny how now that we are so kind of, I don't want to say spoiled, but
we are
spoiled.
I hate
Okay, yeah, you're right. We are spoiled. Myself included, I am totally spoiled along with everybody
too.
Else.
I mean, I jump on Google. I can't remember his name. Da, 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 da. Oh, okay, that's where I saw him from.
And
I do
worse.
The same thing.
Yeah,
yeah, of course
it's worse
it does.
Since I got my iPhone. Now I'll be out in public somewhere like, oh, I wonder about that. Oh, and I start looking it up right then and there. And my phrase, to quote one of my best friends who passed on a few years ago, why? Because we can.
Uh-huh. Exactly.
So,
it's
yeah.
So funny.
It
but,
is
I mean,
funny. It
I,
is funny.
I grew up watching Bewitched. But toward the end. I wasn't around. I mean, I was around, but I was too little to stay up for that. But like the last few seasons when it was in color, when I was older and I started watching the reruns, I was sort of shocked that it was in black and white. Because I grew up with
that.
And Bewitched in color, zoop, with the color.
That was color, yes. Well, it's kind of funny because, I mean, I have, like, black and white TVs, and I mean, there's people that I know that mm-hmm. watch stuff in black and white, and then were surprised to actually see something that was in color because they never saw it that way.
Yeah, that's true.
So that's,
I mean, I did have
the same
a black
kind of in reverse,
TV,
yeah.
Too. I had a black
so
and white
are
TV.
You,
it was, oh, I'm sorry. It's,
oh,
I, just, I had a
no,
black and white
no,
TV
okay,
in my
ahead.
Room and a color TV in the living room. So, but
same,
I knew it was
same,
in color.
Yeah. Yeah, same thing. Yeah, I had like a little 10-inch black and white TV in my room. So, hey, you kids listening now, totally lucky, 60-inch screens and, you know, all
yeah.
that stuff. But, you know, it is what it is.
See, the thing is that is funny to me, and, well, it's not funny, it's actually kind of sad, is that a lot of children won't watch black and white movies, and color has been around since 1929, since the talkies came in, color was in.
Right,
in fact,
there
was actually one experiment with color for a silent movie. So color has always been around. It is a choice of the producer and the director, and a lot of, for newer films, that is the whole point of those, to be black and white, the darkness of life, the seedy side, the communist threat, all that stuff. They
film
chose
noir
black
kind
and white
of look,
because
yeah.
of that.
Yeah, definitely. I find that kind of weird that people wouldn't want to see something because it's in black and white. I mean, are you a purist like me? Like with Bewitched on DVD, they have the black and white seasons available in black and white and color, and I refuse to look at the color ones.
Yeah,
it's like, no, I'm sorry.
I am. Like I said, I grew up watching Bewitched in color, but the first, I think, is it three seasons that's black and white?
The first two, yeah.
Two seasons, black and white. I prefer to watch it the way it was shot. Yeah, I mean,
hey, yeah.
It's like saying I'm not going to watch Citizen Kane because it's in black and white. It's just silly.
Yeah, I agree. I completely agree with you. Yeah.
Now, this is probably a question you get a billion times, but of all those seasons, do you have a favorite Bewitched episode?
Favorite Bewitched episode? Yeah, actually I do. Of course, in the book, I talk about my top 10 best and worst. But my favorite episode is actually Sisters at Heart. It's the 7th season Christmas episode. I just like it because, I mean, not only any episode with Tabitha just rules, okay? That's kind of where I'm at with that. I mean, Erin Murphy just brought so much to that and just such a light in her face and in her eyes. She had a real command of the camera at such a young age too. I mean, she knew,
yep.
She seemed to know what she was doing. A lot of kids, you put a camera on them and you can totally tell they're kind of reciting their lines, but not with her. But I like the Tabitha thing. I like the fact that, you know, Tabitha, you know, wanted to be sisters with Lisa so badly that, you know, she accidentally gave them, you know, different colored spots. I like the racism, exploration and how the message was, you know, acceptance and tolerance, all men are equal, even if they're girls. It was just, for 1970, I mean, you know, that was really, you know, pretty ballsy of them to be so direct about it. But the nice thing about Bewitched is that you can, you know, they were able to explore these kinds of things within the realm of witchcraft, which kind of, you know, took the, I don't want to say the bite out of it, but it just made it more accessible, you know, and made the messages easier to digest. And in 1970, people really needed to hear that. Unfortunately, especially today, especially in the last few months, people need to hear it more, you know, more than they did in 1970. It's just, I don't know what's up with that. But that's, I mean, Elizabeth Montgomery and Bill Asher, they both believed in equality and acceptance and constantly were putting those messages in the show. And so sometimes now on my Facebook page for the book, I'll take like little clips from Bewitched that express those ideas. Like when George Washington was, you know, talking about the spirit of resistance, or, you know, I can't think of another one offhand, but just things like that. Because to me, I think that for myself, I feel like I have a responsibility to express that as much as I'm able, which is not very much. It's like either just through, you know, the stuff for the book or through my columns for SoapCentral.com. And so it's my way of kind of trying to contribute to this, you know, spirit of acceptance and equality that really, really needs to be reinforced out there. So I feel like I'm kind of able to carry on Elizabeth Montgomery's message, if that doesn't sound too conceited. It's just, you know, it's already there. It's already inherent in Bewitched. So sometimes I just emphasize it a little bit just to get the message across.
It's funny because there was a story recently on the news that made me immediately think of that episode. There was two little kids. I think they were in kindergarten. They got the exact same haircut, and they were very, very close friends. And they went to their teacher and said, "Don't we look alike?" And it was really cute, except one was black and one was white. And
I saw that.
Care.
Oh, my God.
And
yeah.
I love that. And I immediately thought of that Bewitched. I went, yes, that's exactly the way it should be. They look
that
alike.
That is exactly it. Yes, yes. I did see that, come to think of it. And you're right. I hadn't even made the Bewitched connection, but that's totally what it is. And isn't that the thing, that kids know these things instinctually?
Mm-hmm.
And we have to be reminded. That's just bizarre to me.
I thought it was the most beautiful story. It's so funny you didn't think of it, because that's immediately what popped into my head, that episode of Bewitched with the two little girls that wanted so much to be sisters. It was beautiful.
It is beautiful. It was beautiful when Bewitched did it, and it was beautiful with these two little boys that, you know, got the identical haircuts. Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
We really need more of that, but it's nice to see that there is so much of that, especially kind of in the time that we're in, where, you know, all these kind of negative things are being reinforced. It's good to know that, especially with the kids, that they're going to carry it forward, and hopefully eventually the scale will tip more towards just everybody accepting everybody, because that's really the way it should be.
Yep. Yeah, and the thing is, it's just the way that it was betrayed in Bewitched. There was other shows that did that, like Mary Tyler Moore with the anti-Semitism was so well done. I don't know if you're a fan of the old Mary Tyler Moore show.
I used to watch it, but when I was, you know, a little kid.
But there was this one episode where Mary becomes friends with this girl, and she was subtly an anti-Semite. Mary wanted Rhoda to come with them to play tennis, but she goes, "Oh, you can't, it's restricted." And so Mary said, "Oh, my God, well, you know, all this time I was Jewish, and I was going there, and all this other," and the girl, you could see her face, it was Mary Fran, who's a really good actress, her face getting more and more upset, and she goes, "But you don't look," and she goes, "I don't what?" And she said, and Mary goes, "I'm not Jewish," and she goes, "I knew you weren't Jewish," she goes, "but for a minute you thought I was, and it made a difference." It was the most well-executed, perfectly done scene. It shows what great actresses they both are and what great writers Brooks and the other people who did the Mary Tyler Moore was. I mean,
right.
That was
the
way I grew up. I grew up with Bewitched and Mary and All in the Family. So
I was
going to
say All in the Family
was normal.
Yeah, I mean, All in the Family was another great example. I mean, they really were not afraid to just come out and say it, you know, whereas other shows kind of, you know, tiptoed around it. They just were fearless. And, I mean, they were exploring those themes all the time. Unfortunately,
mm-hmm.
there's still so many Archie Bunkers left in the world, but I'd like to think that there are, yeah, but including some prominently placed ones. But I would like to think that ultimately, yeah, I went there. Ultimately, I would like to think, though, that there are less Archie Bunkers in the world than there used to be. And, you know, again, like, you know, some best friends of mine have a wonderful 13-year-old daughter, and she's just so open and accepting. And I'd like to think that all the kids, or at least most of the kids, are, you know, coming forward with those ideas. And, you know, maybe in 20, 30 years, you know, we'll look back on this time and go, okay, yeah, that was just a little hiccup.
But
you
the
know.
Thing is that they don't understand. If you watch the old All in the Family shows, Archie changed. He was not a static character. Norman Lear did not make static characters. He matured. He overcame prejudice, and he changed as the show. I mean, he still said stupid things. I mean, he was still Archie, but he accepted black people. He accepted Jews. He accepted gay people. I mean, but it was a slow process through the whole. Two different series, but he'd never stayed stably bigoted. He changed. He'd accept this. You're a good black person. I mean, it's a terrible thing to
yeah.
say, and it's
but,
a horrible
yeah, that
thing
was
to
his,
say.
That was
but
his
that was
way
a
of
step
making progress.
Forward for
yeah.
him.
Yeah.
And in the end, one of his best friends was black. So I mean, at the end, and he adopted the adopted daughter was a Jew. I mean, I'm talking about Archie's Place after the second
series. Right, right.
Yeah.
Danielle Brisbois, yeah.
Yeah, so he changed. He was never always the same person, and he was like a real person, and that was the brilliance of Norman Lear. And the sad thing is Archie changed, but a lot of people who are bigoted don't.
I know. Well, you know, I mean, what is it, in South Pacific, I think they have that song,
You Have to Be Carefully Taught. That's actually why I wrote my children's book, Different is Beautiful, that one line, hopefully children will be taught to be tolerant, but that was actually one of my reasons, that song.
Yeah. Yeah, which is, you know, even, and that was what, well, the movie anyway was 58. I don't remember when the Broadway version came out, but that's the thing. It's like feeling like that, you know, there is kind of a responsibility for us to make sure that, you know, through our art that we, you know, get these messages across. And I mean, that was, again, going back to Sisters at Heart. You were talking about Archie's kind of arc through the show. Now, it didn't really last with Larry, but how it was fun, but also how amazing was it for Larry Tate, you know, Mr. Brown-Noser himself, to, you know, say, I'm sorry, we don't want your account, because he didn't like the idea that Mr. Brockway was, you know, rejecting Darren because he had an African-American wife, but then was suddenly okay when he found out that Darren was married to Samantha. And for Larry to just go, nope, sorry, that's it. I mean, that was an amazing, amazing moment.
He does do that from time to time. Larry does come through.
Yeah, he does. He does.
There was another episode where there was a bigoted, he thought he was like Queen Victoria, and he was very rude. And he said, no one talks in this house, only Darren Stephen. May I talk for your husband? Get out. Shut up.
They should put music to those words. Shut up. Yeah, that's exactly another great example. And that's the kind of things I always try to mention in the book, too, about, you know, I mean, obviously I'm analyzing episodes, and I think that the book kind of treats the show as if it's one big episode. And obviously I'm pointing out inconsistencies and things that don't match up. But I also wanted to make sure that I mentioned all the things like that, where, like, here's where Larry has some growth. Here's where, you know, Andorra and Darren have this warm moment, you know, just all that kind of thing, because it would be very easy to just, you know, because we're a very critical society, and I'm as guilty of that as anybody else, and we're always so quick to tear things down. And so, you know, I didn't want to do that with the book. I wanted to make sure that it was even, and that when there was something to celebrate in the book, and there is in every episode, really, even the episodes that I don't think are as great. And I think that's a beautiful thing too, is that everybody has their own favorite moments of Bewitched, and everybody has their not so favorite moments, and it's okay that they're different. Like, some people really like the outer space episode where the aliens show up because Aunt Clara zaps up their UFO. It's like, that's not one of my favorites, but some people really love that. So it's like, you kind of go, okay, it's cool for you to like that. And, you know, you don't have to like, you know, the Sisters at Heart episode, you know, but that's what's
because
neat
the polka
among
dots,
Bewitched fans.
The polka dots are kind of hokey, but I mean, the point of the episode is beautiful.
Oh yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
But it's funny that you mentioned that, is because I love Aunt Clara. I adore her. One of my favorite ones with her is the one with Benjamin Franklin, where they end up going out on a date.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Or the other one of my favorites with Aunt Clara was the Majority of One takeoff with the Japanese gentleman that she goes out with.
Oh yes, you
mean
Richard Hayes
the name
from
of
the Sound of Music?
I can't remember the name of the episode, but she was do you remember?
Oh, what, a Majority of Two?
Is that what it was called? A Majority of Two?
Yeah.
So they literally took it off from the movie.
And Richard Hayden from Sound of Music played a British guy, played a Japanese guy. It was kind of funny.
Oh, that's who it was. He was actually pretty good.
He was.
I know,
but it was very obvious.
I mean,
he wasn't
I would prefer
Japanese.
A Japanese gentleman playing a Japanese gentleman, but like, Alec Guinness was great in the original Majority when I guess they were trying to match that, but I don't know.
Well, that's probably true. I mean, they did borrow from movies frequently. They did reference movies frequently, and they did a lot of their episode titles are paraphrased movie titles. So, I mean, they were definitely influenced by that. That's cool.
Yeah. It's also because it's a beautiful, the point of the episode is beautiful.
Oh yeah.
And
a lot
of
people
have that Clara.
Well, yeah. I mean, you can't really go wrong with that. I mean, yeah. I mean, Marianne Lauren was just so wonderful in that role, and mm-hmm. and I think my favorite Aunt Clara episode might be the one where Samantha gets the square green spots on her face, and Aunt Clara has to kind of come up with the cure. You know, this is before Dr. Bombay made his appearance, and she mm-hmm. was just—I mean, just the writing was so sharp, but Aunt Clara was just so lovably goofy, and yet she wasn't causing a problem with her witchcraft, which was usually what she ended up doing. But in that episode, she actually was able to help. So I thought that was kind of a nice twist. And they must have realized that too, you know, to not just, you know, kind of make her a one-trick pony. I think they did that with all the characters. They obviously, each character had their gimmick or their shtick, but there were times when all the characters got a chance to step outside of those boundaries. So that's what kind of makes those episodes fun.
I think one of the funny things about that episode, well, the one I was actually a different episode. The one I'm thinking of is the one where Aunt Clara's on trial for to be earthbound, and she makes everybody disappear. And that beautiful speech she gives to Samantha about love, and that she wouldn't let her down, and it was
yep.
all because she loved her. That's one of the most, it's still one of the most touching speeches to me in the whole series, because that's what the whole series is about.
Oh, yeah, and that she was able to overcome her lack of power through that love.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was one of my favorites. I just, even though it was sort of silly with the tree and all that other stuff that she, and poor Darren's desk and all that, but the whole point of it is the love. That was just, I love that part. I love the show. I'm a huge Bewitched fan. I love your book. I think it's great. And it's time for you to pitch it.
Oh,
we got
okay.
Five
well,
5 minutes. So go for it.
We got five minutes. Okay. Well, yeah. I mean, the Bewitched Continuum. It's designed for people to, you know, pop in their favorite episode, then you can refer to that episode in the book and see how it fits into the rest of the series. Or you can start with episode one and go all the way through 254. It is a linear guide. So anything, it doesn't go forward. It only refers to things you would have already seen as if you were watching the show for the first time and first run. So, you know, anything in episode one just refers to what's in episode one. But then when you get up to like 212, you know, it can reference anything from the previous 211 episodes up until that point, but will not go to 213, which is Sisters at Heart, come to think of it. But, yeah, it's just a way, you know, it's the only book that explores the storylines and the characters and the rules of witchcraft and just kind of compares everything all together. It is, like I said, the print version is out on Amazon and CreateSpace. The ebook version is now available on Kindle and just today came out on iTunes. And yeah, and I'm going to hopefully locally here, it's stocked at a bookstore here on Prince Edward Island. That's in Canada, by the way. And we're hoping to do an event in early May where, you know, we'll watch a couple of episodes and then read some stuff for the corresponding sections in the book. And hopefully have some Bewitched-related music in there, and I'm hoping to Facebook Live it so that, you know, people everywhere will be able to see it and kind of see how the book works in that way. And I don't have an exact date yet, but it looks like that's going to be in early May. So also, we got a Facebook group for the book where I'm always kind of posting things and exploring more about what's in the book. That is facebook.com/BWContinuum.
That's very good, because I was actually going to ask you if you have any events coming up. So you preempted me. That's cool.
You were preempted.
You were preempted. I was preempted. Anyway, so do you have any also any autograph sessions, or are you going to any like conventions or anything like that that people might want to be able to meet with you? Or do you do any live online events from time to time so people can touch base with you?
Well, I think I'm going to start doing that. And like I said, we'll start with the event here in Canada. But last year I went to the Mid-Atlantic Nostalgia Convention in Baltimore and met a lot of fans and did autographs there. The next one is in September, so I might be going back there. And yeah, I think actually the live thing, I would love to take questions from people, you know, asking about stuff that's in the book and how the book will help enhance their enjoyment of Bewitched. So I think there's going to be a lot of that in the future. And of course, I post everything about all of that stuff on the Facebook page. So come and like it, join it, and, you know, see some more of my McMahon and Tate-isms. did you see the commercial I did for the ebook where it was in drag?
Yeah. It was cute.
Mimicking the Mother of the Year commercial.
I actually think that was from one of the episodes too. The Mother of the Year.
Yes, it was. Mother-in-law of the Year. Yeah, that's totally what I was making reference to.
I recognized it right away.
I thought you were a fan. I like to do things like that I know that Bewitched fans will recognize right away.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way to do it. The other thing I wanted to ask you is, see, I actually really like the book because I know it's a book and I know it's big. It's like a telephone book. But
it's
fun because, like, I was watching an episode and I was trying to remember something about one of the actors. So I opened the book and I flipped through it and I could find it. So it is a good reference. If you're like me, and you see an episode and there's an actor that's driving you crazy because you know him, but you don't know where, the book's really good.
and that's exactly the point of it, is I wanted to be able to, you know, make it so that people would be able to rediscover things about Bewitched and fall in love with the show all over again.
Yep. sadly, we're at the end, Mike. I want to thank very much for coming on the show. Fast half hour.
It was, but it was a great half hour. I really, really enjoyed digging into Bewitched and some of these other topics with you.
Thank you. I really enjoyed it, too. So, everybody, check my blog. I'll have more information. And thank you for coming on to my show.
Thank you for letting me chat with you.
And thank you for chatting with Sherry. Thank you.